Pod. 22 Pod. In the city that sounds
nice. Huh. There we go. Hi, Pat, how are you?
Not bad, mate, are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Where are you? Are you in a dungeon or an underground lockup?
Yeah, I get relegated to the cellar for this stuff.
Fantastic. I've got...
Just to stay out of the way.
I'm in sort of a building. Mine looks a bit like a hostage video.
I considered putting like a virtual background on, but I thought I should leave it. You're in Norfolk, is it?
I am. I'm in sunny Norwich now. I went to uni in Norwich. I grew up in Kent, went to uni in Norwich, UEA, and then went to London and lived London, Kent for ages. And then last summer, I moved back up to Norwich.
So is it just a coincidence that you live in the same place as Jack then?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I didn't move there for that reason.
I suppose what I mean is it's a coincidence that you started doing the podcast as well.
Yeah, that when I met him, it was because he was from Norwich and I was excited that someone was from Norwich because I love Norwich. But yeah, and then Jack and Stevie did the podcast with as well. He's from Norwich, but he lived in Bristol at the time. So when we started doing it, I was in Kent, Steve's in Bristol, Jack's in Norwich. Now we're all in Norwich, which is good because it means I can just share a car down.
So yeah, I just wanted to take you back to that time. Like, how did you end up at Soccer AM in the first place?
So first of all, I went to uni. I went to live in Canada for a year because I didn't really want to get a job. Then I came back and I got a job in a TV studio making tea and stuff as a runner. They did things like the first series of Weakest Link. They did 15-1, all your staples of late 90s TV. And then someone I knew from uni who was working in media worked for Tim Lovejoy, who was the presenter for Soccer AM at the time and producer's agent. And Tim had been in the office and said that he needed someone to work there. He knew I watched Soccer AM. So I sent a CV off, went for a job interview. They offered the job to someone else, but he couldn't start in time. So then I got the job by default. So I was there from August 2000 till 2007, I think.
Yes. I listened to a podcast with him talking about Soccer AM. I think it might have been with Helen Chamberlain.
Right.
And he was like, it didn't really matter about experience so much. It's like if you brought good ideas to the table, you could end up being on the show kind of thing. Was that right?
Yeah, it was kind of weird. It was a weird group of people, really, in hindsight. Like it was, we quite often would get people put on us that from other departments, certainly in the early days. Like I think I was there, like people would have just been dumped there because they've been sacked from other things at Sky or something like that. So there was a bit of that, but yeah, it was sort of, I guess a meritocracy in that sort of respect in that we have an ideas meeting every Tuesday and we go through that. And if you worked hard and came up with good ideas and things like that, you'd do all right. Yeah.
It's a pretty exciting place to work, obviously.
Yeah, it was great. And I mean, in many occasions, because it was long hours at the time. Like I'd go in on, you do Tuesday to Saturday. So I'd go in Tuesday. Tuesday wasn't too bad. It'd probably be about 9:30 till 6. And then Wednesday, maybe 9 till 7. Thursday, probably about 8 till 8. Friday, probably get in about 7, 8 in the morning. Wouldn't leave till like 1, 2, 3 a.m. And then have to be up a few hours later to do the show. So you'd moan a bit like that. But then you'd be in the pub watching the Manchester Derby with Noel Gallagher or something. You're going, yeah, this is all right. It's all right. Yeah,
I think I heard you talking about that, like there's a bit of a drinking culture on a Saturday after you finish the programme. Is that right?
My job towards the end was music and guest stuff mostly. So I would go listen to music that came through and play all stuff and listen to things. I then go to Tim, I think we should choose from these tracks, and we'd pick things to go on the sort of goals and stuff like that and all the different VTs. But also it was stuff to do with the guests. So if we had, when we'd have if myself or someone else book a guest, I'd then phone them up on the Tuesday or Wednesday, go through stuff, ask them questions, have a little chat with them, and then write an interview for Tim and Helen. But I'd also have to do all the stuff on the day, so make sure that they got in a taxi or however they were getting there, make sure they arrived, brief them when they arrived, get them on set on time, get them off. And then part of that was also take them to the pub and then make sure they get in a taxi home at the end of it. So yeah, there were quite a lot of good, like, sessions that we'd have over there. We'd have quite a lot of bands of that sort of era. I know there's a noughties music sort of thing. So we quite often would end up going across the road with bands and footballers and stuff like that and having a few drinks.
Who was more mental? Was it the bands or some of the players?
The longest drinking session, I think I mentioned this in Happy Hour, but we had Gavin Henson on, the rugby player, if you remember him. And so he started going out with Charlotte Church like a few weeks beforehand and we got him on. And I was really tired. I'd worked really long hours, like getting the show ready that day. And he said, do you want to come? And we went to the pub after, had a few drinks. He brought some mates down from wherever he's from, Bridgend, Newport, where, some one of those sort of areas of Wales. And he brought some mates along for a weekend in London while he did the soccer games. They all watched it. And he's going to go for some drinks in Richmond. Do you want to come? I was like, oh, I don't know. They persuaded me. So I went along and ended up on this massive all day long drinking session with them that we ended up in. It was fine in Richmond because you're just in Richmond. But then we went into like trendy London clubs, which is not my normal sort of place, like embassy rooms and all these sort of places. And we were just going from taxi between the paparazzi following him around everywhere and all this sort of stuff. It was really weird. And then we ended up in some, I can't remember where it was, some nightclub. And Charlotte Church was there with her friends. And I was sort of sat between Gavin and Charlotte. And I was so dry. I've been drinking since midday. I was very tired. It was like 2 a.m. or something. And I looked at my phone and the Pope had died. And I was like, all right. So I tell Gavin, I said, oh, Pope's died. He goes, I don't care about it. I'm not religious. Tell Charlotte. I was like, oh, shit. I don't want to tell Charlotte Church the Pope's died. this is going out of control.
On a night out. Yeah.
So I just touched him and said, I've got a really serious voice for being drunk. So I'm really sorry, Charlotte. I'm afraid that Pontiff has sadly passed away. And she went, oh, all right. Well, that wasn't the compassion I expected from the voice of an angel. So that was a big one. In band terms, the biggest drinkers that we had on, the biggest session we've had on with the band, probably not what you'd expect from the Naughties band, was Star Sailor, which, lovely blokes, still friends with them now, sort of thing. But I assume from their music that they probably wouldn't be massive boozers. I don't know why. I just thought that was like, that'd be out and go. But great. That was a big, long, all day session as well.
And then, like you say, in terms of choosing the music and bands, was it just like up to you what you kind of were into at that time?
Yeah. So it was, I mean, there was generally a sort of indie sort of slant to it anyway, and hip hop as well. And to be fair, we would play other bits, but it wasn't. We weren't, none of us were particularly into sort of hardcore or metal or anything like that. So we'd play a bit of AC/DC or stuff like that occasionally, but we weren't sort of going really into that. So it was a lot of that, a bit of hip hop as well. But yeah, I would listen to two things, work out what I thought was good and what I liked or interesting at the time. And I was also quite, I think before, whoever did the music before would just get CDs given by the music library at Sky and just listen to a few bits of that. Whereas I was quite proactive in getting in touch with record labels, getting them to send us out things. If I saw something that sounded interesting in The Enemy, I'd phone up. Like I remember getting hold of a sort of version of Oh My God by the Kaiser Chiefs that they'd recorded in their bedroom. And we played that before it was a proper single, if you will. So I was quite proactive in that. But yeah, and then I'd go to Tim with 10 tracks, and we'd probably have to pick 6 for the show or something like that, or have many tracks in good, and we'd just sort of discuss what we liked and what we didn't like.
And then I remember like bands like The Bravery coming on, and I think they had to pick a team, didn't they, to support?
Yeah, well, early on, we used to get people on who liked football, and then we were like, there's loads of bands that we really like that don't necessarily like football. I was 18 at the start of Britpop, basically. So all that stuff I love. And Ash, when we wanted to get Ash, I wanted to get Ash on. And they weren't into football. Like, I'd rather have Ash on than talk about football. And so we just would get anyone on. And if they had no interest, if they didn't have a team at all, then like America's that, we'd start occasionally like picking teams out of hats and stuff like that for them. So we had like, The Bravery Day. I think we did the same for Jurassic 5 as well, something in a hip hop sort of thing. So, yeah, good. It was good fun. But then they went to the Bravery. Then went to, they drew Wolves, I think.
Yeah, I think.
And then they went to, they played like in Birmingham, and they're like, "Oh, we're going to wear Wolves shirts, so everyone loves us." Obviously, they're gonna like, yeah, not everyone in Birmingham supports Wolves. So obviously, they I think it's probably a bit different if you're in America and there's one team per city, pretty much. So I think they got a bit confused there.
Yeah, got to mention the time the Cribs were on. Were you there for that?
Yeah, when it was around the time of, what's it called? You're Gonna Lose Us or something like that.
Yeah.
That was good. Not the biggest football fans, I would say. It's fairly safe. Yeah. Lovely blokes, and what a band as well.
Yeah, yeah. Just, I remember it being really funny. I think ended up being a bit of a feature, like someone copying Ryan Jarman's voice.
Because all I really remember is him talking about he wasn't allowed to play football or something at school, and he got put on trampolining or something like that with the girls.
I vaguely remember
that.
And then he stuck the goal away at the end, which is funny.
Yeah, that was really good.
Then obviously that Serge goal, was that the best one?
Yeah, that was really good. They came on quite a bit. They're a really good fit for us. There were certain bands that where their audience would exactly match up with our audience, like Oasis, Kasabian, Hardfire, The Enemy, that sort of thing. There was quite a sort of big crossover there, something. But yeah, that was good. A nice, really nice guy. I don't know, Tom's got a bit weird recently, but at the time we had a really good time with them. They'd come on quite a bit. Yeah. But yeah, great goal.
I know, yeah. Like almost too good, that one.
Yeah. He's a very good player though, isn't he? We played at Wembley Stadium with, I think, Serge and Chris, certainly maybe Tom as well, I can't remember. We had a game at Wembley Stadium when they opened up the new stadium, and he was on our team there, a really good player.
And then, yeah, in terms of going to gigs, like, did you get a lot of good access to...
Yeah, really good.
A lot of good gigs.
I mean, it wasn't the best pay Soccer AM. It was fine, but I would have spent my money on CDs and gig tickets anyway. I could get those free sort of thing. So, yeah, I was, to be honest, most weeks I'd be going to at least two gigs. So I was going to quite a lot of stuff. There's like most bands... indie sort of bands anyway, I would have gone to see at some point. And there's entire bands I've got, there's gigs, I'll find gig tickets. I'll go, I literally cannot remember who this band are, what any of their songs were. And then I'll go and play it back and like, rings a bell vaguely and stuff like that. But yeah, I went to a lot of gigs at the time, yeah.
Whereabouts were you living at that point?
I was living mostly, so when I was in Ealing, so I was out there, which is quite convenient to go straight down the central line to Tottenham Court Road for Astoria or Astoria 2, Borderline and all that sort of thing. So yeah, there and quite convenient for Shepherd's Bush Empire, Hammersmith as well.
Is it quite an exciting time to live in London? Like you say, you're into Britpop. Like, do you think it was as exciting, kind of thing?
It's weird because at the time it felt so long after Britpop, but then now, if you look back, it was like a couple of years or something like that.
It's weird, isn't it?
But it feels, because of like the age I was, it feels now like I still look at bands these days. I think of bands as new bands, and then I look and their first album came out like 9 years ago or something like that, or they're having a 10th anniversary of some album. Yeah, right. I thought they're a new band, but I found it a really exciting time, and because I knew a lot of bands through Soccer AM, a lot of people like that, where you quite often bump into people out and about. Like there's a bar, there's a hotel called the K West in Shepherd's Bush, and I don't know if it still is now, but at the time it's where a lot of bands would come and stay when they're in London. It was on my way home, so occasionally I'd just go into the bar, they'd have a drink there, and you'd always bump into, it was Kasabian or someone else, you always bump into some band that you knew at the bar and just had a little drink with them and then carry on your way home. So yeah, it was an exciting time. I really enjoyed it.
Yes. I bet some of your mates are loving it, weren't they? Kind of the access you'd get.
Yeah. Like I remember my friend Mark coming down from Norwich. He's a lawyer now, but he came down, to visit. He'd never been to the show, but he came along and it was the show we first had Star Sailor on. We went to the pub afterwards and it was Bolton versus Chelsea was on TV, and Vernon Kay had been on the show the week before, but he said he'd come to the pub to watch the game with us. So he came to the pub, he turned up and watched the pub. Star Sailor was there. I can't remember who else we had on, but we ended up just drinking all day. when I end up going back to Vernon Kay's house, like, and in Maida Vale, and like we're playing, like, and there's like photos of him around with him and obviously Tess Daly and all this sort of stuff. We're going, it's a bit weird. This is my Mark going to go, do you do this every Saturday? I go, not really. No, first time. Yeah, and then I remember the next day turning on the radio and Vernon Kay was on the radio. And the first thing I remember him saying was, I'm so hungover. And I was just lying in bed, just listening to this, just also very hungover. And he said, if anyone was around my house last night and they stole the cue ball from my pool table, can I have it back? I thought I'm one of the few people in the country that genuinely has to go and check their pockets and make sure it wasn't them. And it wasn't me. So, good house guest.
Thanks for listening to this episode of 22 Grand Pod. If Naughty's guitar music is your thing, then you might enjoy our Patreon page, where for £3 a month you will get access to the following series. The Naughty's Deep Dive, where we go through the likes of the Stalking Pete Doherty documentary in painful detail. My favourite 2000s album, where patrons and other guests come on to talk about their favourite album of the era. Legend or Landfill, in which we go through Enemy's top 10 albums of each year from 2001 and see if we think they are indeed legendary or for the landfill. Unsigned Stories, where we chat to bands that didn't quite make it in terms of signing that elusive record deal. We also have Fan Stories, where I talk to people about their memories and opinions on all things Naughty's Indie. You also get early access to any main podcast episodes, and it's also worth checking out the YouTube page, where you can see extended video versions of the interviews, as well as plenty of other bits of commentary and opinion. All links are in the description. Now back to the pod. Yeah, I remember you talking about some kind of small Oasis gig where you ended up at the front. Was that right?
Yeah, when that album came out, I was such a big Oasis fan in like the 90s, the first two or three albums. And it's when the album came out, I always forget the name of, that's got The Importance of Being Idle on, the one that was sort of returned to form after an album or two that weren't as good perhaps. And they were playing Clapham Grand in South London, and not really a traditional venue on the list, but it was a place I'd go to for sort of club nights occasionally. And I managed to get tickets to that through music people when I got there. And I was with my friend Jim, who in the 90s used to run an Oasis website in the early days of the internet, until Oasis management made him take down the website. There's a website about Oasis. It wasn't no music or anything on it. It was just like, shows how early internet, how different it was. You must not talk about our. but he was a big Oasis fan as well. And we were still sort of towards the back. And I remember they were playing Live Forever, and there was a woman on her phone in front of me. This sounds like I'm making up some sexist nonsense, but she was literally texting a friend about going shopping. And I was like, "Is it one of the best songs ever?" And I was like, and it was just in my eye line. It was really annoying. Like, I was trying to watch this. This woman just sending this. So I'm like, "Let's go through." So we made our way down towards the front. It was in the sort of mosh pity bit, where it was a bit noisier. And we had so I got down there, and they played Wonderwall, and just they started playing Wonderwall. I'd met Noel through Soccer AM a couple of times, so I knew him vaguely. And I knew Liam watched Soccer AM, but he never wanted to come on. So I'd never met Liam at this stage. And Liam just looked at me in the crowd, and went, "All right, lad, how are you doing?" And I went to my gym and went, "I think Liam was talking to me then." And he was going, "Fuck off." I don't think he's swearing it. "No way."
No,
he said, "Fuck off. No, there's absolutely not. No, no way. You could be talking to anyone." I was going, I'm pretty sure it was me. And I looked up and I'd seen Noel look up to see who Liam was talking to, see me, and then start laughing. And I was going, "It was definitely talking to me." And he was going, "No, absolutely not. Not having that. Not at all." Anyway, so I finished Wonderwall and Liam walks off stage, and then Noel comes on to Don't Look Back in Anger, and just before he's leaned into the microphone, he went, well, Robbie Knox." And I was going, "Maybe that's a different Robbie Knox. Maybe there's another one here next to us. You never know, do you? You never know." I'm a Liverpool fan, so that was on the Sunday night, and on the Wednesday, I went to Istanbul to watch Liverpool win the Champions League. Wow. From being 3-0 down. So it was a good week. My childhood dreams coming true.
Yeah, that is amazing. It's become a bit of a catchphrase, aren't I? Happy hour, that as well.
Where are we next? Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
So you mentioned the story about The View. Did you say you were over there with them or something in Europe?
I was filming a thing called Snow Bombing that still goes, I think. It's a music festival in the snow. It's mostly dancey stuff. They did have some indie bands and that. And this year we were there. They were like, The View were there. Dizzy Rascal, I think, was there. And I saw The View trying to go up, because bands would come over to play the festival. They sometimes learn, have a go at skiing. But The View obviously weren't probably dressed. They're in their jeans, like trying to ski and just falling over the beginner's slopes. So ski past, going, oh, mate, how are you doing? It was
be good music video.
Yeah, it would be good, yeah.
And
yeah,
I remember, I think I'm sure it was you telling some mad story about Liam Gallagher. Like, instead of using the door in a pub, you use the window.
Who told us this? Someone, oh God, I've forgotten the guy's name. Someone music industry told us this. So this guy who, I've forgotten who it was, I didn't witness this. It was a Manchester derby, and him and Tony Wilson of Factory Records fame and all this was this guy, Tony and Liam were in this bar, and it was like down the city centre. There was like a big, like, floor to ceiling, glass windows at the front. And they were winding up, Liam about the football or something, or just trying to annoy him like that. And he just got really annoyed, just picked up his chair and just threw it at the window, just smashed this entire window of this bar. Like, that's the middle of the day, this was. And Tony Wilson just went, Liam, that was absolutely wonderful. So rock and roll. Just like clapping. Like Liam Moray. He's just like, fuck off. And then just walked out through the window.
That's it. I totally forgot about the Tony Wilson bit. That's hilarious.
Yeah, really good. Really good. He came on
so great one before he died. It was lovely.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned like Liam not wanting to come on. Like, why do you think that was? Because he seems to still be a fan, doesn't he?
I think. Yeah, he didn't want to come on at the time because he was. We were told. I've never spoken to him about it, but he loved the show so much he didn't want to mess it up or do something and then no longer enjoy it. I think was his reasoning. I don't know. That's what we were told. I don't know whether how true it is or what that even means, if I'm honest.
Okay. Because like his latest album title, I'm pretty sure it's after something Fenner's always says on Soccer Room.
Is it?
Come on, you know, yeah.
Oh, right, yeah.
Well, maybe, who knows? Maybe still influenced.
How is it to work with people like him? Like, he seems like very on the ball in terms of making features and stuff, Fenner's.
Yeah, really good. I mean, it's a really great team at the time. So Tim was the producer and presenter at the time there, and I learned so much from him. He was absolutely brilliant at his job. So that was really good. Fenner's was really good fun. Sheepheads, Tubes, Rocket, Neil. Well, there's a really good gang of people there at the time who were quite hardworking. You had to sort of, it wouldn't be the job for everyone. You had to sort of work hard. You had to sort of be a team player, really, because there was a lot of pressure. You had to put up with a little bit of abuse, like both in terms of sort of banter, for want of a better word, and also just general abuse from Tim. But yeah, it was a really good group of people, and I'm still in touch with everyone now. I just get an occasional message, like from Sheephead, just randomly referencing something that happened once with someone or something that someone said, or someone, like, I got a message from this guy Damo we used to work with, there referencing some obscure audio edit on a video once, stuff like that. So you still get a lot of messages from them. But yeah, it was a great good group of people to work with.
Was there any like guests that you really wanted to get on that you couldn't get on for some reason in terms of music or anything?
There's bands that I've loved that we didn't get on. Like we'd ask a lot of different people. I'm a big Weezer fan, but I don't think we ever asked them, so, you know, even when they're over. But I'm trying to think what most bands we get on. It was a bit weird because people who knew the show got it, would understand the sort of level of guests we'll get on. If you know what I mean, because we'd have new bands, we're having big name things. But then if you approached someone at a record label or a promotions person who doesn't know Soccer M, they'll just think of it as some little morning football show on Channel 401, and they wouldn't understand. They'd say, "Well, you can have this little this band, not a great band or something that I've got a single on or something like that." We go, "Well, we just had El Gallagher on last week and the Arctic Monkeys and this or something." So, can we have the person we were asking for? Sort of thing, if you know what I mean. But yeah, it was. I can't remember what the question was, but yeah, it was. I forgot what I'm talking about. Sorry.
Yeah, just if there's any guests that, that you could never get on.
In terms of music, I don't think there was anyone particular. I mean, there's loads of acts I would get on, but realistically, not really. But most bands at the time would come on. And I can't really think of there's anyone that we never got on particularly. We had like Kasabian, Arctic Monkeys, Kaiser. We had a lot of them of that sort of libertines, that sort of genre at the time. Yeah.
And did you say you had to come up with a bit of a structure for the interviews?
Yeah. So what would generally happen is I would phone up during the week. I would phone up whoever was coming on or one of the people who was coming on, and just I'd have jotted down a few questions for them, chat through with them, check what they're up to, and get a little bit more than it's just on the internet. So you have a chat, and then you'd write the interview from that for Tim and Helen, so you could go, okay, this is an interesting thing. So like we had Placebo on and found out, for example, that one of the guys from Placebo used to be in the Williams pit crew. Like he did like Formula One and Le Mans or something. Yeah. He was like,
it was mad.
Not Brian, I've forgotten his name now. Lovely guy. But he was like one of the people who do the tires. So he'd have a wheel like when they were changing tires. He said it was the most stressful job. Because you do your tire thing, you do that, and then occasionally there'd be four of you, one per tire, obviously. And then the car would go around. And if you had like something on the radio, like half a mile later saying one of the wheels has fallen off, you'd be looking around thinking, you should be looking at your mates and go, well, one of us is going to lose our job now. And then they'd go, yeah, it's front rear. And you'd be like, yeah, I'm fine. Sorry, mate. You won't be here anymore. So it was just so stressful. So I'd go through, do that, write the interviews, and then in the morning, go through it with the guests to make sure they were happy with everything and there are no surprises and all that. And
okay. Yeah. I was going to say, yeah, it was a pressure on you to get things right, but were you kind of clarifying them?
I'd do that to double check. So I'd speak to them, I'd write an interview, and if there's anything that I'd go through them, I wouldn't make them answer them there and then, but I'd say if I'd written anything that didn't seem correct, then I'd have time to then go and quickly go into the studio and just change it during the break with Tim and Alan.
Did you leave when Tim did? Is that right?
Yeah. So I'd been thinking about leaving for a while, but because we were doing so much good stuff, and not for any particular reason, just because you do the same thing for years, get a bit bored, don't you, after like 7 years of it sort of thing. So I would leave, but I didn't want to leave and then everyone still be doing like really cool stuff. So when a lot of us, like we went to three Champions League finals and played football at Wembley, went to Noel Gallagher's 40th birthday. We're doing like a lot of cool things or things I thought were cool. And but then when Tim said, I've got the chance to do this, I was like, yeah, 100% in. So me, Fenners, Neil, Sheepheads, John Dyson, that's it, all left and went with Tim and went over and did that for a bit. And Fenners eventually came back and Sheepheads back working at Soccer now as well.
Okay, right. Was that his Channel B thing, was it?
Yeah. Yeah, so it was with Simon Fuller, who managed the Spice Girls and David Beckham and that, and did Pop Idol and all that. It was a joint venture with them and Tim.
Ah, right. Yeah, I was reading about that because I remember enjoying some of those videos, but I think Tim maybe said it was ahead of its time, which is probably true for YouTube.
Yeah, I know that's what everyone says about things. like anything doesn't work, everyone goes ahead of its time. But it was stuff like, there weren't really YouTubers at the time, and it was things like, to watch the videos, you had to download a special player. It wasn't just like you go on YouTube any website now, you can just watch a video. You want to watch this stuff, you have to download the, I can't remember what it was called, player. And who's going to do that? I mean, some people did, but it's a lot of effort to do that sort of thing. And then eventually it died. And then more things. You'll see these clips pop up from Channel B occasionally with like, 8 billion views on Facebook. Some weird Facebook group in America. It was the resurface.
There are some great stories on there. I remember Ryan Jarman's story on there about Courtney Love.
Yeah. I think
where he spilled some wine on a carpet and then didn't tell her or something, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You see, I can't remember. I'm 45 and my brain's gone now. I've got no long-term or short-term memory.
And then obviously, like, you've gone into YouTube now. It's just interesting for me because I've just reached 1,000 subscribers, so I've been able to apply. Yeah. But is it just the last couple of years you've got into it?
In the relatively recently, yeah. I don't know why I didn't do it before. I do know why. I thought YouTube was for younger people. I thought I only use YouTube personally to go on and learn how to do something, like whether it's an editing technique or some DIY type thing. I never did DIY things. I don't know why I mentioned that. things like that. And I knew that young people watched it as progress because I've worked in that industry. I've run a production company at the time, so I still do. But so I was aware of YouTube and I was aware of YouTubers. I knew Jack. I knew a few other YouTubers, Spencer FC and that. But I never thought of doing it. And then I was at Watford's training ground with a guy called Will Brazier, who does sort of internet-y TV presenting and stuff. And he was saying, why don't you start a YouTube channel? I was like, well, I'm probably a bit old for that, mate. He said, I don't want this to sound rude. He said, but like, I know what it's like being an 18-year-old starting uni, because every September there's 50,000 vlogs of an 18-year-old starting uni. Because I don't really know what it's like being middle-aged. I was like, well, fair enough. So I thought, Joe, I'll do a video once a week for 6 months. If I do, because I think it's good to commit to something and do it, give it a go. I'll see if I enjoy it. And if I do, I'll keep going. If I don't, I won't. And it, yeah, went better than I expected, to be totally honest.
Yeah, yeah. Like people like you and Blue Van Man's been, he's absolutely gone massive as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's done well, yeah.
Yeah, he's it's a lot of videos, 3 videos a day sometimes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, little food reviews. Yeah, there's a few slightly older people. I don't know how old Mark Goldbridge is, but he's not. I wouldn't say he's in his early 20s. Yeah, there's not that many of us, but there are a few over 20 YouTubers around.
Yeah, obviously, you're interviewing people now on Happy Hour. Is there any people you like you'd hope to get on maybe for music?
Well, do you know what? I was just saying to Jack the other day, because I think he's obviously good at getting on YouTube and stuff like that, but he does all the sort of guest booking. I said, look, do you want me to help book bands and stuff like that and do music stuff? So I'm going to, just waiting for him to send over some stuff that he uses to send out, so that, and then I'm going to start doing, trying to book band booking and that. So it'd be good to get any sort of, you say, be Noel Gallagher's, that sort of stuff on it at some point, if that was possible. And a lot of good new music out of the winner as well. So sort of things like that. It would be good to get more music on, I think, more musical guests. We had The Darkness on the other day. That was a band we never had. That was a band I love that we never had on Soccer AM.
You'd have thought they'd been a really good fit, actually, wouldn't you?
We definitely asked them. I went to Cardiff to watch them once. I was traveling around. I was really into them. I don't know. I can't remember if there was a reason or just if they didn't want to do it or just couldn't do it, whatever. But yeah, that did happen. But yeah, but then, so I was really excited to meet Justin Hawkins the other week. I was like, this is just, and he's a lovely bloke. So I was going, yay, glad to hear it.
It's a great episode. That is YouTube channels great as well?
It's really interesting, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. I really like it. The in-depth sort of, I like his mannerisms as well, but I like how in-depth he goes into music, how passionate he is about the sort of craft of songwriting.
Yeah, definitely. It's like a lot of insight, hasn't he? Got a lot of insight. Yeah. It's good. Okay, I guess one to finish on then, which you mentioned, Noel Gallagher's 40th birthday. What was that like?
It was good. Obviously, it was good. It was mad, the number of people that were there. I mean, well, not the number of people. There weren't that many numbers of people, but the people who I knew, famous people who were there, something like that. Like Paul Weller was there, and obviously Oasis and all that. Kenny Jones was there. In fact, Sheephead, who I worked with, me and him went to the toilet, and Kelly Jones from the Stereophonics was in there having a piss at the time. And Joe went, oh, mate, I just want to say I really love your band. He goes, oh, thanks, man. He goes, cool, yes. I've really had a few drinks this time. But then Joe went, like, because I know a lot of people slag you off. I'm like, shut up. No. He goes, you know what I mean? And a lot of people don't like Stereophonics, but I think you're great. And, he, and Kelly Jones has been lovely in Fergus. Well, I've been quite a few people like us. We were like headlining the festival the other week, so whatever it was. Okay, we are quite popular. And he goes, no, you know what I mean. Everyone's always going, oh, Stereophonics are shit. No, no, that's it. Please shut up. I was like, I like Stereophonics as well.
Hilarious. Doubling down on it.
Kenny was so polite to Joe, considering what an idiot he's been. But it was funny watching. And there's a DJ playing. It was in some club in London. I can't remember where it was. There's a DJ playing, and he'd play like a jam song or something. I noticed that Paul Weller would like stop. Stop dancing or something, just stand at the side, have a little drink. And if it was Oasis, I noticed that Noel wasn't really dancing as well. So that's the thing that musicians do when it does their own songs, sort of thing. So yeah, it was really good night. Boozy. 22 Red Pod.